What I'm here to talk about this morning is the 100th anniversary of Mother's Day. So Mother's Day started in the United States of America back in 1914 on the second Sunday of May. So I'd like to wish wives, moms, grandmas a happy Mother's Day. If I was to put a title on my lesson, it would be The Mother a Child Needs. We all begin life as babes that cling to our mother. One thing that I remember about a newborn babe is that when you touch their hands, they instantly grasp whatever they touch. A woman named Kate Douglas Wiggin wrote, "When a woman puts her finger for the first time into the tiny hand of her baby and feels that helpless clutch which tightens her very heartstrings, she is born again with a newborn child. This is the beginning of motherhood." And if you think about that, you know, God created the newborn babe to instinctively do that. That ties them instantly to their mother. Moms need to be. I have a list of what moms need to be. It's very lengthy. Being a mom is very hard, very challenging, almost has no reward other than watching their child become what they want them to be. So their reward is their child. Moms need to be loving, patient, understanding, tireless, nurse, doctor, psychiatrist, taxi driver, cook, laundress, organizer, wife, seamstress, color coordinator, motivator, counselor, mind reader, listener, friend, leader, Christian, example, honest, and fair. Sounds impossible. All rolled into one person. And if you think about it, moms are every one of those. I would like to read a story by Emma Bombeck titled, When God Created Mothers. When the good Lord was creating mothers, he was into his sixth day of overtime when the angel appeared and said, "You're doing a lot of fiddling around on this one." And the Lord said, "Have you read the specs on this order? She has to be completely washable, but not plastic. Have 180 movable parts, all replaceable. Run on black coffee and leftovers. Have a lap that disappears when she stands up. A kiss that can cure anything from a broken leg to a disappointed love affair. And 6 pairs of hands." The angel shook her head slowly and said, "6 pairs of hands? No way." "It's not the hands that are causing me problems," said the Lord. "It's the 3 pair of eyes the mothers have to have. That's one on the standard model, Lord?" The Lord nodded. "One pair that sees through closed doors when she asks, 'What are you kids doing in there?' When she already knows what the answer is. Another here in the back of her head that sees what she shouldn't see, but she has to know. And of course, the ones here in front so that she can look at a child who goofs and says, 'I understand and I love you,' without so much as uttering a word." "Lord," said the angel, touching his sleeve gently, "come to bed. Let's work on this tomorrow." "I can't," said the Lord. "I'm so close to creating something so close to myself. Already I have one who heals herself when she is sick, can feed a family of 6 on 1 pound of hamburger, and can get a 9-year-old to stand under a shower." The angels circled the model of the mother very slowly and sighed. "It's too soft." "But tough," said the Lord excitingly. "You cannot imagine what this mother can do or endure." "Can it think?" said the angel. not only think, but it can reason and compromise, said the Creator. Finally, the angel bent over and ran her finger across the cheek. There's a leak, she pronounced. I told you that you were trying to put too much into this model. It's not a leak, said the Lord. It's a tear. What is it for, said the angel. It's for joy, sadness, disappointment, pain, loneliness, and pride, said the Lord. You are a genius, said the angel. The Lord looked somber. I didn't put it there, but they all have it. It's a good story on what a mom is. Again, it's another story of moms are special. And this is their day. Mothers hold their children's lives. We find this in Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. In a lot of ways, we are what our parents make us to be. And a lot of times, if you look at the parents, you understand the child. I'm going to read Children Learn What They Live. This is a poem. It's an old poem I've had for a long time. I found it clear back in the 1990s. Children learn what they live. If a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. If a child lives with hostility, he learns to fight. If a child lives with ridicule, he learns to be shy. If a child lives with shame, he learns to feel guilty. If a child lives with tolerance, he learns to be patient. If a child lives with encouragement, he learns confidence. If a child lives with praise, he learns to appreciate. If a child lives with fairness, he learns justice. If a child lives with security, he learns to have faith. If a child lives with approval, he learns to like himself. If a child lives with acceptance and freedom, he learns to find love in the world. So if you think about that, raising a child is probably one of the hardest jobs that God put us here to do. It's so easy to do the wrong thing, and it's so hard to always do the right thing. So we have our children, in our hands. We mold those children. Teaching and loving your children is a circular motion. The more you give, the more you get. The more you get, the more you want to give. The opposite of this is also true. The less you give, the less you get. The less you get, the less you want to give. So which one are you? That applies to all of us, just not moms. So which one are you? Think about it. The more you give, the more you get. There's a Family Circus cartoon that talks about a system that most kids never figure out. It took me a long time to figure this out, so think about this when I tell you, and think about what year, how old were you when you figured this out? It's so simple, but I'm thinking I was in high school somewhere. It says, I figured out a system for getting along with my mom. She tells me what to do and I do it. So think about what year you figure you decided to do that. None of us did it right away. I don't think there's anybody in this room that did it right away. I mean, I have a little 2-year-old granddaughter that it's going to take a lot of years to figure that out. Is there another saying that I remember when I was in first and second grade, and it's funny how this sticks in my mind, but if it was somebody brought to class, and I don't remember which year it was, but step on a crack and break your mother's back. Does anybody remember that? Well, it was funny. We marched out, you know, back then, and I don't know if they do it today, but we marched out in twos to go to recess, and recess was really important. And you walked on the sidewalk, and everybody would take care of everybody else to not step on the crack. And then there was a crack monitor out on the playground. to make sure that nobody did that, and pointing and everything else if you stepped on one. So it was really a big deal when I was growing up. I'm sure it's not as big a deal now. But maybe that helped me not be that superstitious either, because, you know, I could see, you know, all the cracks that I stepped on throughout the week. My mom was still okay when I came home, so that must have solved that issue too. A mom has hundreds of jobs, and one of the most important is developing self-esteem in their children. This is done in four ways. Self-esteem is very important for all of us. The first is what I have already read about, train up a child in Christ. And I think that's very important, and that should be the number one thing for self-esteem. Number two, a mother is affectionate. The root meaning of the word affectionate is to lay hold of, to act, or impress. Affectionate is the verbal and physical expression of love. Each child needs to be told frequently and under various conditions that he or she is loved. A mother should say, "I love you," to a child as much as possible with hugs and kisses. Third, a mother has empathy toward her children. Empathy is the projection of one's feelings over to another. This is what I don't have. I don't have empathy. So I'm a analytical engineer that it's really hard to convey feelings to me, and I have really none of those. But I'm good at the next part. This is done by listening. So I think I have hope. A mother should make sure she takes the needed time to hear her child is saying. So they need to be a listener. Never consider a conversation to be too childish to listen. True empathy is also shown by being slow to give pat answers. So a mother's very good, I think they learn this very quickly, to spend a lot of their time listening to try to understand exactly what the child's saying before they give an answer. Giving an inappropriate answer may be worse than having none. All the feelings of a child should be considered when answering the conversation. None is too insignificant. No conversation is insignificant to a child. A mother is never to degrade her child. Never. The world will do this. The world will do this to every child. Every class they're in, monthly, maybe daily. So they need that security when they come home. A mother should never degrade their child. Have you ever heard this phrase, close your mouth and open your arms? Close your mouth, open your arms. This was written, there's a story written by Diane Perrone, and she had six children in 5 years. She had twins. One of them was twins, if you do the math and I'll figure it out. Six children in 5 years. And this is the one thing that she learned, being a mom, that really worked. Close your mouth and open your arms. Her mom taught her this. Her mom gave her some advice. She had a really hard thing to deal with. And what her mom told her is, when a kid's in trouble, close your mouth and open your arms. She says, "I tried to follow that advice while my own were growing up. With 5 children in 6 years, I didn't always succeed, of course. I have a big mouth and a little patience. I remember when Kim, my oldest, was 4 and knocked over a lamp in her bedroom. Once I saw that she wasn't cut, I launched into a tirade about how this lamp was an antique and that it had been in our family for 3 generations and that she should be more careful, and how did this happen? Then I saw the fear on her face. Her eyes were wide, her lips trembling. She was backing away from me. I remembered Mom's words, I stopped in mid-sentence and just held out my arms. Kim flew into them saying, 'Sorry, sorry,' between sobs. We sat on her bed, hugging and rocking for a long time. I felt awful for scaring her and for letting her think, even for a nanosecond, that the lamp was more valuable to me than she was. 'I'm sorry too, Kim,' I said when she calmed enough to hear me. 'People are more important than lamps. I'm glad you weren't cut. Fortunately, she forgave me. There are no lifelong scars from the lamp incident, but it taught me that it's better to hold my tongue and try to retract words spoken in anger, fear, disappointment, or frustration. That's a very good story on, it's easy for us to react with somebody taking away something that we think is very precious. But if you think about that story, there's nothing more precious, there's nothing physically precious in this world other than life and people. Everything else is replaceable. Fourth, a mother sets high standards for her children on precept and example. Jesus said, "Be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." And that's Matthew 5:48. This is a high and noble standard for living. Mothers should have nothing less. A mother is to live the example as well as to teach the right things. She should always hold righteousness and wholesomeness before her children. Fifth, a mother should be in authority over her children. Kids will always try to do the opposite of what they are told, especially as teens. That's that rule that I told you in the beginning. Child psychology is to say the opposite of what you want, but if you really want to get along with your mom, just do exactly what she says and you'll always be happy. I found another cartoon that has a teenager buying a blouse. She asked the cashier, "If my parents like it, can I exchange it?" That, you don't need to say anything about teenagers, that's it. That's the entire story right there. So, I found another cartoon on authority. The parents are sound asleep in bed, and their children are standing at the foot of the bed. And one says, "They look so sweet and peaceful when they're asleep. You wonder how they could ever yell at us during the day." Kids need a mom that keeps them going in the right direction. And the way to do that is with authority. And then after our kids are raised and have left the nest, moms get to start over and be grandmoms. If your baby is beautiful and perfect, never cries and fusses, sleeps on schedule, and burps on demand, an angel all the time, you're the grandma. Another Family Circus cartoon shows a boy with a football that is flat and has a hole in it. And the boy says, "I need a new football. I don't know if I should send up a prayer, write a letter to Santa, or call Grandma." In closing, I'd like to read what a mom is again. And this is what moms need to be. This is an amazing list. But I wouldn't line through any of these. I think every one of these is what a mom needs to be. Loving, patient, understanding, tireless, nurse, doctor, psychiatrist, taxi driver, cook, laundress, organizer, wife, seamstress, color coordinator, motivator, counselor, mind reader, listener, friend, leader, Christian, example, honest, and fair. Whether you are wives, moms, or grandmoms, thanks for all that you have done. And I hope you have a wonderful day, month, year, and life. And with that, I'm going to offer you the gospel invitation on behalf of this church and the members of it. If you want hope of a heavenly home up with God in heaven, there's things that you have to do. You have to be part of a church. You have to be a member of Christ. You have to be one of His members, one of His saints. And to do that, you have to be baptized, you have to come forward, confess Christ as the Son of God, and be baptized. And we give you that opportunity as we stand and sing.